This is a reading of a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Influence of the Dead on Destiny. This is the last lecture, Lecture 8, entitled Intellectuality and Will, The Necessity of New Forces of Knowledge, given in Dornach, December 22, 1917. At this point in our study, it would be good to look back at what has passed before our souls in these discussions, not merely repetition, but an illumination of things from a particular viewpoint as a matter of orientation. What we have studied here connects in a certain way with what we have considered in previous years, and both imparts positive communications to us and fills our soul with those thoughts that humanity needs in this serious time, one of the most serious in world history. Even though we have already gone through a number of things in the last few years, truly serious things lie ahead of us. If we underestimate the gravity of the times, we will distract our souls from much that is urgently necessary for humanity in the most imminent sense and from experiencing this present time in a worthy manner. We have attempted to characterize the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century with the methods that result when we observe the decisive events connected with the development of human beings in these centuries. As you know, if we want to understand the most important characteristic of the present time, we must realize that our time suffers from a superabundance of intellectuality. However, we do not mean to say that humanity is especially bright today in comparison with earlier ages. I mean that the various soul forces of today's human beings are inclined toward intellectuality. And because we live in a materialistic age, intellectuality is employed exclusively to interweave the human soul and material existence. Our intellectuality in the present age is not very high, because it is almost exclusively directed to compiling, arranging, and summarizing, if I may be so pedantic, material things and material manifestations. In a certain sense, this intellectuality rules alone within the human soul. What necessary soul force must be added to the intellectuality in the next age, which is just beginning now? Everything today, science, art, and human social thinking, is permeated with intellect, even though it is intellect that refers only to the physical plane. What must be added is something that, if really understood, cannot be intellectual, the human will. It is the human will permeated with love, in the way I described the human will in connection with the impulse of love in my title Intuitive Thinking as a Spiritual Path, also known as the Philosophy of Freedom. Human will manifests itself in the subconscious realities of our drives and desires, whether they are egoistic desires, social desires, or political aspirations. All of this remains unconscious or subconscious. If the will, which we dream away or sleep through, is raised into consciousness, as we showed in recent lectures, then this view of the will can no longer be materialistic. The fact that the so-called most important minds of our time question whether human freedom actually exists show us that the will is not understood in our time. Questioning the existence of human freedom is proof of an unspiritual way of thinking. From a spiritual viewpoint, we must realize that whoever doubts the fact of human freedom does not understand the true reality of the human will. For as soon as we know the will, we also know the obvious correlate of the will, the impulse of human freedom. Of course, today freedom and necessity are spoken of in such a way that one can clearly recognize what I described last time using the trivial comparison with the gourd and the bottle. I said that if someone made a bottle out of a gourd, one person could say that it is a gourd, and another could say that it is a bottle. Human beings argue in this way about freedom and the necessity of human actions, but their arguments have the same value as when one stubbornly maintains that it is a gourd and the other insists it is a bottle. It is simply a gourd that has been made into a bottle. It is essential that human beings take the power of the will into their consciousness. As soon as we speak of world will, we are speaking also of what is really working in the world will, world love. One does not have to speak much about this love, for it is working when the will is really present. It is much more meaningful to speak of the individual impulses of the will that are necessary in our time, than to hold forth in sentimental generalities about love and love and love. However, things must be looked at in such a way that there is real courage for knowledge and real strength for deeds in knowledge, because the ability to understand the complete human nature is necessary for our time. Our time must begin to ask, as a human destiny question, how must the view of the human being develop when taking into account the fact that as feeling and willing beings, we exist in the same world as the so-called dead, and are alone among the living only with our sense perceptions and intellect. And we must add to the inner soul impulses working with this question a real will to understand concretely the life of the human being between death and a new birth. For without an understanding of the life of the disembodied human being, it is impossible to develop an understanding for the task of the human being within the physical body. Spoken abstractly to an extent, it is necessary for present humanity to become familiar with and to take into itself the inner impulses of the time spirit, Michael. This time spirit is the one who, in a narrow sense, has reigned since 1879, but in the wider sense has ruled since the middle of the 15th century. Most people today hardly have the slightest idea of the statements I just made. I have often said in these studies that what is communicated to our young people today as so-called history is mostly fable convenue on the one side and often worthless stuff on the other. If real history is to come about, we must understand the inclinations of the recent centuries and what must change for our age. People have already an inkling of what a powerful, drastic change occurred in human thinking and feeling with the beginning of the fifth post-Atlantean age in the middle of the 15th century. The most senseless saying in connection with evolution serves many people as a leading thought. Quote, "Nature makes no leaps forward," close quote. Just as nature makes a mighty leap from the green leaf to the colorful petal, so nature also makes leaps forward everywhere. And there was not a general transition out of the fourth post-Atlantean epoch to the fifth post-Atlantean epoch that began with the second half of the 15th century. Rather, there was a mighty drastic change then. We can orient ourselves only if we can, at least to a certain extent, compare what the few centuries of the fifth post-Atlantean epoch have brought up to now with what preceded them. For both of these things are entirely different from one another. Today I wish to draw your inner awareness to this matter from a certain viewpoint. If people were to familiarize themselves with what can be learned from modern science and education, if we can call it education, and were to prepare themselves out of this, and then take the writings of the 15th century in hand, they would not be able to understand them, particularly if they are especially bright people of their time. Now you must not misunderstand me. I cannot in any way, in accordance with all the requirements of anthroposophically oriented spiritual science, promote warming up old things. The talk of the need to rehash old books and old views that is so prevalent in the world today cannot be done in our arena of anthroposophical spiritual science, because we must obtain directly from spiritual life itself what must be revealed today, and because something significant is being revealed for those who receive it. However, you can realize some things when you look at the way learned heads can behave in relation to things that have come down as wisdom. We do not need to go back any further, let us say, than to the 14th or 15th century, to Basilius Valentinus, for example. I chose him because he was the most renowned adept of the 15th century. When the erudite take up the works of someone like Basilius Valentinus, they do not know what to do with them. These learned people usually either talk nonsense and amateurish stuff, because they cram themselves full of what cannot be grasped, but believe in what is not understood, or they do this with whatever streams toward them from Basilius Valentinus. If we read something by Valentinus with a real spiritually trained eye, EYE, we very quickly discover that his works contain a kind of wisdom that is indeed not usable for modern people who have the typical interests of today. This wisdom is of the kind that we can bring into connection with the souls between death and a new birth. Also, the dead do not need to study Valentinus, for we have something in anthroposophically oriented spiritual science that speaks the language common to the living and the dead. What this spiritual science gives is enough to speak with the dead in a way familiar to us. Yet I bring this as an historical fact, that the way the dead take up world knowledge has a certain kinship with such writings as those of Valentinus. He speaks of all kinds of chemical processes. He appears to speak of what one does with metal and other materials in retorts and melting pots. In reality, Valentinus speaks of the knowledge that the dead must attain if they are to nurture their processes in the lowest realm, which for them is that of the animal. He speaks of what one must know of the impulses coming from the spiritual world to grasp the microcosm from out of the macrocosm. This is the knowledge activity of the soul between death and a new birth. But it can be performed properly only if it is prepared in life between birth and death. This was still present as an atavistic inheritance, as an inheritance of ancient wisdom in the 15th century. Valentinus speaks of this ancient wisdom, of the secrets of the human being's connection with the macrocosm. He speaks real divine wisdom in imaginations, as we would say today. This way of relating to the cosmos in knowing has disappeared in recent centuries, but must be attained again in a more spiritual way than was the case before the 15th century. For it must be practiced both in science and in socio-political life, and it must be recognized that a wholeness or healthy state of humanity is possible only under the influence of such goals. An ancient revelation, an ancient inheritance came down through the centuries, so to speak, but was lost in the fifth post-Atlantean epoch. It must be attained again in a new way. We can attain this revelation, as we have discussed repeatedly, only by permeating ourselves actively and willingly with the Pauline, quote, "not I, but the Christ in me," close quote. We can attain it only if we call upon the forces proceeding from the mystery of Golgotha, so that after taking these forces into our own soul, we search in the cosmos with them, and only thus can we meet the dead who work among us. Otherwise we will be separated from them for the simple reason that the plane of the physical world that we grasp only with our intellect and sense perceptions can never bring us into any kind of connection with the dead. However, how do the learned today stand in relationship to this old wisdom? They relate to it somewhat like the scholar who said, quote, "The last most important procedure by Basilius Valentinus was the 10-month-long incremental heating of the philosophical mercury and gold in the philosopher's oven, through which the quote-unquote black raven bore the quote-unquote peacock, and this bore the quote-unquote white swan that then generates the quote phoenix with its young," close quote. This, however, a red substance is the philosopher's stone that can reproduce itself into infinity. One is unfortunately not able says the modern mind, to comprehend how anyone, even the most talented and most enthusiastic adept, those who possessed the secret of the Philosopher's Stone, could follow such instructions. Close quote. Thus Theodor Svedberg of Uppsala wrote in his book about these things from the standpoint of modern science, and he is only one representative of all the learned minds that must say that one is, unfortunately, not able to comprehend. It is still best when they say this, that one is not able to comprehend. Valentinus had already written the clarifying words for them in his title Zwölf Schlüssel und dessen Verständnis, translation 12 Keys to the Cosmos and its Understanding. Quote, if you can discover no light in it, so will no transparent sight or natural eyes be able to help you to find at the last what you lacked at the beginning. Then I do not want to speak further about this key, as Lucius Papirius taught me. Close quote. Valentinus already spoke in this way to those who come after him, who can at most say about the old wisdom, quote, one is unfortunately not able to comprehend. Close quote. But these modern human beings have something better to do than understanding the spiritual. These modern people must concern themselves with all kinds of other things. Above all, when we speak of the spirit, they must occupy themselves with slandering or libeling our words. To the nonsense of Max Nessoir from Berlin, we can add the work of the Dutch philosopher Boland. I have not as yet read his scribblings, but I have been told a few things. Boland made several contributions to the development of philosophy by inspiring the philosophical youth of Holland with his false statements about pieces from Hartmann and Hegel, but also could not avoid applying his non-productiveness to make all kinds of false statements about our spiritual science. We must reveal the falsity of these words again and again. Attention to the way the present time, with its spiritual scientific impotence, relates to what is necessary for humanity, belongs to the real work of spiritual science in our souls. This science of the present day, I am not speaking here of outer science, which I recognize fully, even though I did not chase after every natural scientist, which calls itself philosophy and the like, is not much more today than abstract talk carried out in complete confusion, like arguments over gourd and bottle. Unfortunately, all too often we fall for the nonsense of modern philosophers and are even pleased when here or there some philosophical fellow cannot find anything to criticize in anthroposophically oriented spiritual science. We do not need to be pleased, as many of us are, when from this side or that someone drops a word of praise. These words of praise are usually not based on a great understanding. However, we must prepare ourselves for the fact that slanderers and libelists, such as Dessoir and Boland, will appear again and again, and that they will soon increase in number. These people have to busy themselves with something, and because they are much too comfortable to go into what must be learned from the spiritual world for the well-being of humanity in the present age, they occupy themselves with making false statements about what is attained from the spiritual world. I said that Basilius Valentinus offered an ancient atavistic inheritance. It was a science of how the human being is created out of the cosmos, a science of the soul freed from the body. And that must also be the science that wants to work together with all that is more than outer nature. This science can be furthered only if we add knowledge of the will to the materialistic intellectual element of the modern age. When we truly recognize the will, it can only be recognized in its spiritual nature, because it manifests itself only spiritually in the present stage of human development. A courageous bringing up of life impulses out of the sphere of the will is very much lacking in the present time. People today want above all to talk and talk. That is good, but only if it is based on a real knowledge. The present time does not want real knowledge. Everyone wants to speak based on meaningless premises. And we have seen that the misfortune of our age lies precisely in this neglect of the spiritual element of the world, We are only being honest about the development of humanity if we really enter into the exploration of those will impulses that are necessary to forward the development of humanity. Obviously, these things should not be taken personally. In this or that place in life, everyone can naturally ask, "What should I do?" Certainly, it cannot be required that we grasp today what we must do in order to take the first steps tomorrow to undertake something that is world epoch-making. Karma will bring to us what we are to undertake. What we must do is open our eyes, the eyes of the soul, to truly know and understand the times. What we have to do is not to sleep through this time, but to look into what is happening. The materialism of the fifth post-Atlantean epoch necessarily has taken from human beings, because they had to orient themselves in a purely personal manner at first, to the comprehensive ideas that flow out of the spirit of the time and that we can have in common with the so-called dead. The intellectual stuff that has become so big in our time has taken hold of not only human souls, but also the social and historical development of the age itself. Because of the necessity of history, human beings have, with a certain right, for these things are not to be criticized but rather characterized, given over to machines a lot of what they formerly performed out of their own initiative, out of the organic initiative of humanity. The materialistic age is at the same time the machine age, and this machine age fashions, with machines, not only what it requires for ordinary life, but the war itself is cultivated by a great machine or machinery. It could not be otherwise. For in the last few centuries, humanity has not only developed to a certain level, but it has also cultivated views within this level that are intended, above all, to give validity to what arises from the making of machines within the outer social order, either in the making of mechanical machines or in the fashioning of social machines. For example, before and up until the war, the conduct of international finance was a great machine. Human beings gave much up to the mechanical. A certain part of humanity wanted to retain of this mechanical element basically only what makes the trivial necessities of life enjoyable. One could say, in the winter, slave away, in the summer, swim, and think only as much as is necessary so that the world machinery works for one. That became the signature of the age. It is not as if that could not have happened. It is quite obvious that the world machinery had to come into being. To criticize what has taken place is a dilettantism in which spiritual science cannot participate. Yet the matter must be grasped and its peculiarity recognized so that the right impulses can develop in contrast to this. Again and again human beings have come who have already expressed the appropriate ideas for this age. However, those who uttered these fitting ideas in recent decades were considered to be impossible human personalities. Despite the work of these people, who saw clearly how the social structure of humanity around the world must be under the influence of the machine age, such people as Bright or Cobden, the people who came later simply followed the order of the day. People would have had to expend some mental energy to discover what was appropriate in the ideas of Bright and Cobden for the machine age. However, human beings of today shy away from the exertion of penetrating the intellect with the will in order to comprehend reality. They do not want to imbue their thoughts with will. They want to let their thinking aim sentimentally at what gives them a pleasant feeling when they want to edify themselves. Under the influences of such thinking, divested of will, which is so warm and happy with superficial sentimental talk, we accustom ourselves to grasp even the most important questions with weak-willed, cowardly thinking. Above all, we accustom ourselves to learning nothing concerning historical world development. Is humanity then prepared to learn today? Even that should not be spoken as a criticism, but rather as a characteristic. All that I am saying is not meant to criticize, but rather to stimulate the will. We must become clear about how to bring into our thinking the will impulses that can serve the well-being of humanity. Unfortunately, human beings today are not inclined to learn. They let things pass by and discuss them and think they are mastering the will also with discussion. How much meaningless talk has taken place during the time when the disastrous causes of this world catastrophe were being prepared? How much idle talk was inspired by the nonsense suggested by the peace manifesto of the Tsar? All of this unproductive talk happened because people would first have to understand that it was nonsense, and that all this talk was millions and millions of miles away from stimulating a will impulse in humanity. Do people recognize this nonsense? No, for the time being, they do not. What has taken the place of the idle talk about all kinds of world goals in connection with the peace manifesto nonsense of the Tsar, who is now gone? The other nonsense for peace from Woodrow Wilson took its place. The nonsense was replaced with the same nonsense. This shows that humanity does not want to learn. But if we can recognize this lack of desire to learn, then the sacred will for right willing will be enkindled in our souls, the right willing that must proceed out of true comprehension of what is working and weaving in our age. I said in my public lectures that what developed over the last four centuries in the historical dream of humanity was expressed like a world program, in quotes, during the 19th century by people like Karl Marx. The impulses were already gone when this world program was expressed. What was expressed was basically the foundation for the historical development of the last four centuries. What is the situation today? The situation is such that many people have given up thinking about social connections. They leave it up to professors of national economy who have spoken enough nonsense in the course of recent decades, or indeed centuries. Real social thinking, which must spring from knowledge of the impulses coming from the spiritual world, has been lost in the so-called leading factions. Only one faction placed socio-historical ideas into the world in recent times. That faction, in the esoteric viewpoint, is that of the Brothers of the Shadow, as compared with the Brothers of the People's Parties of recent centuries. Social democracy brought socio-historical ideas, even though they were shadow ideas. They were gray shadow ideas of an especially dangerous kind, because they were totally fructified with the dried-up spirit of the last centuries. However, the other factions of humanity lacked socio-historical ideas altogether, because they would have had to borrow these ideas from the spiritual world. It would have been necessary for them not to develop their religious, social, and historical ideas in a vague or unctuous manner, but rather to comprehend social development on the firm basis of knowledge. No one will understand social development in reality if they do not, from the very beginning, understand what has been laid as the foundation of our contemplations and studies here in these last weeks. What the so-called living today can receive from the spiritual world, and what the dead reveal out of their life between death and a new birth, speak the best about this. The new conception of the mystery of Golgotha, which we must approach through the deepening of anthroposophically oriented spiritual science, has something to say about it. All that we should let pass through our souls as earnest Christmas thoughts in this serious time. For it is for the salvation of humanity that the being whose birth is celebrated in the Christmas festival entered into earth evolution. This being came not for mere comforting talk for the soul, but so that human souls would permeate themselves with the will to will, with the will to want, if I may use this paradoxical phrase. If this will to will penetrates human souls, it will be the impulse for a yearning for really new ideas, for the old ideas are worn out and of no use anymore. Sometimes we cannot even use the words that signify them anymore. We live in a catastrophic time. To call what is happening a war is already almost anachronistic, as the term has arisen out of the habit of still calling the bottle a gourd. Just as little can we call what is happening war, just so little should one speak of peace lightly in the old manner of comfort-loving hope. Mighty signs are announcing themselves in our time, and it is incumbent upon humanity to attempt to understand these signs. The events transform even while occurring. In 1914, a world event began that one could perhaps call a war between the Entente and the Central Powers of Europe. Behind this war, however, something considerably different is at work. Totally different enemies are facing off. Now, a serious symptom announces itself, working and smoldering behind what we quite inaccurately call a war between the Entente and the Central Powers. This is a symptom that consists of the sad clash between the people of northern and southern Russia. It is a significant symptom, even though it could at first fade away, for what smolders under the events of today. People do not like calling things by the right name today, because they do not want to will, because they would rather avoid the seriousness of the time as long as possible, as long as their stomachs do not growl too much. It is a matter of our really developing the will to look into the deeper foundations of events, that we finally for once do away with all superficiality to look things in the face with the eye of our soul. EYE. While we have now that a kind of overview of things pass through our souls, in the next lectures we will have to point out and expand upon a number of things that are connected with the deeper ideas we have devoted ourselves to in these studies. However, I believe that in this time one most honors the mysterious threefold necessity which moves through world development and is the brother of human freedom and the freedom of other creatures, when one does not want to weave a veil over the eyes. Here on this earth we must comprehend freedom. Also in this connection, present-day human beings learn a great deal when they turn their eyes to the dead, because the dead know that freedom, in the time between death and a new birth, comes through what they bring with them from the life between birth and death. Being embedded in the intelligences of the higher hierarchies becomes a natural necessity for us when we pass through the gate of death, and we follow their impulses, just as here on earth a natural event follows impulses of nature out of necessity. Then we are still free when we pass through the portal of death, when we carry into the spiritual world in our soul the knowledge of spiritual becoming and spiritual being that we acquire here in life between birth and death. This is something that is connected in the deepest sense with the mystery of Golgotha. And because this is so, I believe that Christmas contemplations at this time must not be sentimental, but rather must call upon the will to will. Take the Gospels. How much in the Gospels is a call for the will to will? The Gospels are not sentimental writings. They are writings that, though speaking to the most modest element in human nature, also want to awaken in the human being the strength of will that he or she can summon up. The Christmas candles should burn, not only so we can give ourselves over to a happy, festive reflection, but also that they may be the symbols for the kindling of the light of the will that serves the salvation of the world. Humanity has much to make up, to catch up on, and it must be made up. For by developing the force that lies in this making up, or catching up, humanity will develop the right healing forces to come out of the present catastrophic time. Humanity was not given the task merely to come into these times. Much more important is the task to come out of them. This task stands as a sacred sign, I believe, written in the blazing script behind all the Christmas candles that have already been burning before our souls for the last 4 years in a different way than they did some years earlier. Let us meet tomorrow at 4 p.m. in the Basel branch for our Christmas festival. We will gather here Monday at 4:30 p.m. for the first performance of the Paradise play, and I will follow it with a Christmas contemplation for those of our friends who are not detained by something at home, but are here, attending to the work and that sort of thing, and who perhaps would rather spend their Christmas here that day. As the end of Lecture 8 and the end of the lecture cycle by Rudolf Steiner, The Influence of the Dead on Destiny.